from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made this morning, roughly 8:30 a.m. when I was reading a book. I was comfortable, drinking coffee, wearing the most ridiculous fleece pajama pants festooned with bears, because why not? Who doesn't love bears on pants? Oh, listeners, you should really see me when I'm reading for the show at home. It's a sight. And then, suddenly, I couldn't quite make out the words on the right side of the page. It started as a small visual block and then started to sparkle. This is my tendency when migraine comes to me. It arrives first with visual aura. That small sparkle slowly grew, taking on the shape of a crescent moon, as it always does. A phantasmagoric crescent moon kind of glows and rages and changes colors, gets a lot of purple. And then that shape pushes larger, blowing out half of my field of vision. And then it's gone. But for me this morning, the migraine was not gone. Aura comes to me as a kind of warning. Years ago, my migraines were debilitating. These days, I get so many, they seem to have dissipated in potency. To be sure, some still shut me down, but I have hosted countless episodes of this show in the throes of a migraine. I'm not always very sharp when it hits, like right now. I'm not always able to find the words I want, but I can work through it, and that's really a blessing to me. A lot of people can't when they have migraine. So let me tell you about the book I was reading this morning. It's about migraine. The book is called So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. The author and editor, Kathy O'Shea, is an English professor at MCC and a longtime migraineur, which is a term I had not heard until her book. Her book is a collection of essays, stories, pieces of literature, poetry from many different authors describing their own experiences with migraine. It is beautiful and painful and sometimes sad. Virginia Woolf wrote about her migraines, Emily Dickinson, Oliver Sacks, and by collecting this literature, Kathy O'Shea has given us a gift, a book that is helpful for people who suffer migraines, but a book that is much more powerful for those who don't. Friends, family, even doctors of people who suffer from migraines don't often understand what it is truly like, but now they might. I've asked Kathy O'Shea to join us this hour to talk about the book and the goal of helping the public understand migraine. The book, again, is called So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. Kathy O'Shea, welcome to Connections.
Thank you so much, Evan, for having me on your program. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this important topic that reaches so many people in the Rochester area.
When do you first remember getting a migraine?
I think one tends to remember one's first. I was 14 years old, and I was camping with my family, and my brother and I were watching a movie at a rec center when all of a sudden this just overwhelming, very visceral pain took me over from my head. I didn't have warning signs of any kind, and it was very frightening. And my parents had no idea what to do, because I think it's important to remember that as awful as migraine is and living with migraine, we've come a long way in the last, say 5 years in terms of migraine research and medications that have actually finally been developed specifically for migraine. So back when I was 14, that would have been some time ago now, like 46 years ago, people didn't know what to do with migraine patients. So they threw you on all kinds of medications that were created for other things that had terrible side effects. And, I saw a neurologist, but it was just a long, painful journey to get to some real help, which is fortunately available today.
Yeah, I mean, for some, the migraine treatments and different therapies are working wonders. And for others, it can be a lifetime of frustrations, of sort of chasing what they think will work. And you hear about something that works for somebody else who suffers from migraines, and you try it, and you go, why doesn't this work for me? And it can be very, very frustrating. What is a typical month in your life like now, Kathy?
It's been a rough month for me in terms of my migraine. And I've kind of been in an intractable migraine now for, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks. And that doesn't mean it's full blown. Migraine is kind of a circuitous cycle, for many of us, and particularly those of us with chronic migraine, and which is defined as 15 migraine days or more per month. Mm-hmm. And what happens is that it goes through different phases and different levels of pain, but that there's in this kind of level I'm at now, I'm at what I call a functional level. And so there's when the real invisibility of the disease comes forward, because if you people were to talk with me, if I'm teaching a class, I don't think most would realize that I'm in the midst of some level of migraine.
How does it affect you when you're teaching a class? You know, for me, when I'm hosting the show, as I'm doing right now with a migraine, I guess my migraine today is like a 5. That's actually more severe than most that I get these days. And I don't feel all that sharp. You know, I feel a little clumsy with my words today. I've got pain on the left side of my head. You know, I was a little light sensitive earlier. So I don't think I'm doing a particularly good job hosting the show today because of the migraine, but I'm working. And when you are teaching, how are you affected?
Yeah, I can tell you it affects, you know, me in ways that are scary. Sometimes I know when I've been teaching the course remotely the last year and a half, but before that, you know, when I'm in the classroom and if I'm either ready to get a migraine, in other words, I'm getting my own individual warning signs, I'm in the middle of one, I get word drop, which is really frightening for an English professor. So I'm teaching a class about literature, about writing and the power of language, and I all of a sudden can't come up with a word that is the most basic word. And it's hard to cover some of that sometimes. And it does. It slows me down, and it makes me a little bit less passionate in the classroom, and energetic. And it certainly causes fogginess. It can cause clumsiness. You know, things that many people perceive as like that this person, you know, there's something really wrong with this person, but they perceive it as almost, you know, just a I've read many times where some people, you know, it gives the effect of someone almost being drugged or drunk.
Drunk or hungover.
Exactly. So it's very difficult on even, you know, even functional days are difficult. But, you know, I call those days the days where you can get through and do the things you have to do. Mm-hmm. But not much more than that. And then, of course, there's the full-blown attacks, which don't allow you to do anything. You know, there's a wonderful passage in Virginia Woolf's, one of her works, where I believe it's in Virginia Woolf's, where she says that no, it's not a disease that, I'm paraphrasing, but not a disease that's fatal, but that often we wish it were, you know, when you're in the throes of it. You know, if you knew that you were going to live in your worst days all the time, you know, you would. It's just a very frightening disease to live with.
Yeah, and that can be, that's hard for people to hear. But I have experienced, you know, maybe one or two a year still get to that level where it's shut it all down, get in a dark room, and hope to fall asleep. When the pain gets that bad. You know, I've talked to people who've said, you know, look, I just want to cut my head off. I mean, it's sort of a.
And you're serious.
Speech, but
I mean,
awful.
At the time, no, but you're serious. I mean, I hate to say that. I know it's frightening for people to hear, but when you're in the throes of it, it's the pain is that bad.
Yeah, it's bad.
The other effects that, you know, that one lives with migraine, I mean, there's so many, as you know, that aren't just the migraine headache attack. You know, there's so much more to migraine than that. And that's one thing that's a real misunderstanding with people, I think.
Yeah. I, by the way, I am just really grateful for your book. And I really do hope people seek it out. So I'll ask you probably several times this hour, but where they can do that. Where are they going to be able to find this book, Kathy?
Oh, sure. Really, at any site where you can buy, you know, or you can get books. I'm going to say Amazon because that's, you know, the likely place a lot of people go. But Barnes & Noble, you can get it online. I believe there's one copy at the Pittsburgh store right now. But I know that I wish we had more independent bookstores because I'd love to push those in the Rochester area. Because you can order them through independent bookstores as well.
There you go. So find your independent bookstore and order through there.
I'm pushing for that too. So, yeah, you can get them. You can get it pretty much anywhere where you would purchase.
Sure. The book's called So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. And coming up here, I'm going to read some of the literature that Kathy has collected from real luminaries who suffered migraine. But before we do that, I want to ask you a little bit about the field of migraine books, because there are so many, and in your own book, you riff on this. You know, you note that if you go to the bookstore, if you're in an airport, like you'll inevitably pass a book that says, like, one's called Mind Over Migraine, or
Heal Your Life.
Heal Your Life. Get over it. And I share your opprobrium for these books, because for me, the biggest concern is not that we're going to oversimplify migraine and make people think that through a self-help book you could just get over. I'm sure some of the techniques help some people. My concern is that the general public who doesn't suffer migraine walks by those titles. They don't read them, but they think, oh, yeah, it's like a headache. Just, like, get over it. You know, like, have a cup of tea or something. You know, I mean, it's just, yeah, what do you think?
I think you got the idea that I get more than exasperated with that. I walk by these books and I think, you know, people are going to be so much more, it just adds to the misunderstanding and lack of education people have about migraine and its complexity. And it increases the kind of ignorance, I think, about the disease and the complex brain disease that it is. And I think, too, the implicit suggestion there is that what we really need to do, those of us who suffer, is we need to shift our attitudes that the headaches and the roles they play in our lives are entirely within our control to manage or cure, which is so far removed from the truth. Not that there aren't things we can do to help ourselves. I don't mean to suggest that. But I find that, yes, these books do more harm than good on the whole, I will say.
Yeah, and that's why I thought the structure of your book is important here. Can I ask you just to let the listeners know, the sections, the way you divided the book, and then we're going to talk about why and read some examples?
Absolutely. What I decided to do was to organize it by, first of all, you know, letting people have really experience, you know, kind of viscerally experience the migraine. So from the perspective of these great writers who can, you know, it's hard to put words to migraine. It's hard to put words to pain and illness in general. So when a doctor asks you to describe your pain, usually we have to use metaphors. Like, you know, it feels like a hammer is on, you know, hitting me over the head. Well, we don't really know what a hammer, you know, hitting us over the head is like. We can imagine that. We're not able to really have the exact language that these writers can really provide experience with, and with their beautiful use of language and the power of the imaginative experience. So the first part is called What It Feels Like. And what I do is I divide that really into the warning signs that people get. So I try to take people through the cycle of a migraine so that, you know, you get aura before migraine, and that's actually before the warning signs come. That's actually, it's a 20% of people with migraine get aura. I mean, I think there's a perception that everybody who has migraine has aura.
Yeah, most don't, right.
Most don't, right. So, but I do have a section on the aura, you know, where there's some beautiful passages.
Can I read one?
Vividly.
Do you mind?
Oh, please.
So
not at all.
This is the great Oliver Sacks describing exactly what Kathy just said, and I will quote now, taken straight from the book here. Quote, I have had migraines for most of my life. The first attack I remember occurred when I was 3 or 4 years old. I was playing in the garden when a brilliant, shimmering light appeared to my left, dazzlingly bright, almost as bright as the sun. It expanded, becoming an enormous, shimmering semicircle, stretching from the ground to the sky with sharp zigzagging borders and brilliant blue and orange colors. Then, behind the brightness, came a blindness, an emptiness in my field of vision, and soon I could see almost nothing on my left side. I was terrified. What was happening? My sight returned to normal in a few minutes, but these were the longest minutes I had ever experienced. I told my mother what had happened, and she explained to me that what I had was a migraine. She was a doctor, and she, too, was a migraineur. It was a visual migraine, she said, or a migraine aura. The zigzag shape, she would later tell me, resembled that of medieval forts, and was sometimes called a fortification pattern. Many people, she explained, would get a terrible headache after seeing such a fortification. But if I were lucky, I would be one of those who only got the aura without the headache. That's Oliver Sacks.
Beautiful.
I mean, just very vivid, and that's it for me. I mean, Oliver Sacks, no surprise that someone like him could describe it better than just about anybody, but that is exactly it. And my mother gets aura now, but no pain. And on the subject of this, let me read what I just got an email from a listener named Maureen, who says, Evan, I was diagnosed last fall with vestibular migraines. After over 20 years of medical tests and visits for dizziness, brain fog, inability to concentrate. In my 40s, I'd had a few migraines with the full kaleidoscopic aura and pain until I could vomit, and began having ocular migraine of aura with no pain in my 60s. Maureen, just like my mother. I'll continue. Maureen says, I had a small stroke 2 years ago, and when I went blind in my right eye last summer, I was completely freaked out. Again, they'd said I had had a stroke. It wasn't until I was in physical therapy and regained my equilibrium, but still was feeling unsure about many aspects of my life, that my therapist referred me to a clinic which treats vestibular migraine. I was diagnosed only halfway through the questionnaire. My husband and I have been reading info and marveling at the obvious explanations for so much of my behavior and so many of my physical problems. Although I still have the episodes, it isn't as bad as the certainty that I had a coronary blockage or a brain tumor. That's from Maureen. Maureen, thank you for sharing that, and good luck to you.
Bless you.
Yeah, indeed here. So when you hear stories like Maureen, and frankly, when you see Oliver Sacks, Virginia Woolf, you know, you're collecting these authors, Kathy. Did it surprise you how many great writers have had migraine?
Yeah, actually, it did. I knew of, you know, the few, some of the, you know, a few obvious ones. The first I had discovered back when I was in graduate school, and I was thrown into teaching a composition class, and I was given the textbook I was going to be using, and the very first essay in it was called In Bed by Joan Didion, and that's the work that I have at the beginning of my book, because I think it captures all five themes that the book is organized around. And it's kind of the definitive, essay, I think, where one reads that and says, oh, my God, I get it. You know, I sobbed while I was reading it, because it was like the first time I read an author that was writing about her own experience with something that was so much a part of my life. And such a, you know, renowned author as well. But yes, it was amazing to go back through. Like, I've got pieces in here, you know, from medieval times coming all the way up through the present. And I just kept finding more and more. And that's what, you know, just fed the passion to keep going and to keep, you know, developing this into what eventually became.
Can I read a little bit of what Joan Didion wrote about migraine?
Oh, please do. Please. Yeah, everybody should hear this.
This is only a portion of that. But as Kathy mentioned, this is right in the introduction here. The great author describing her own battles with migraine. So I'll quote now. Quote, 3, 4, sometimes 5 times a month, I would spend the day in bed with a migraine headache, insensible to the world around me. Almost every day of every month between these attacks, I feel the sudden irrational irritation and the flush of blood into the cerebral arteries, which tell me that migraine is on its way, and I take certain drugs to avert its arrival. If I did not take the drugs, I would be able to function perhaps 1 day in 4. The physiological error called migraine is, in brief, central to the given of my life. When I was 15, 16, even 25, I used to think that I could rid myself of this error by simply denying it. Character over chemistry. Do you have headaches? Sometimes? Frequently? Never? The application forms would demand. Check 1. Wary of the trap, wanting whatever it was that the successful circumnavigation of that particular form could bring, a job, a scholarship, the respect of mankind and the grace of God, I would check sometimes. I would lie. That in fact I spent 1 or 2 days a week almost unconscious with pain. Seemed a shameful secret, evidence not merely of some chemical inferiority, but of all my bad attitudes, unpleasant tempers, wrong think. end quote. That's Joan Didion. A shameful secret is how she viewed her own suffering from migraine. What do you think of that, Kathy?
I think that's something a lot of people with migraine share. It's a guilt. It's a guilt, and it's something that we've been led to believe, I think, over time, is something to be shameful about, because we are fed this idea that we can control it, and it's just a headache. I mean, one of the chapters is just, it's just a headache, question mark, because there's a work in that chapter that's actually kind of funny, but it's a story, and it's from the work called Migraine Mafia, believe it or not. And the woman is at a party with her sister-in-law, who just keeps telling her, have another glass of wine. It's just a headache. And, and she, berates her for having canceled lunch appointments. And these are things we live with. We live with the fear that we can't plan anything because we don't know if we will have a migraine on the date that one thing is going to occur. And then you feel like you're letting down family and friends. And so I think that's part of the shame that we live with. I think people distance themselves from people who, continually have to cancel events and appointments. And yet it's beyond the person's control in most cases.
The second part, as Kathy mentioned, is the invisibility of migraine, what people don't see. And I'm just going to read a short poem from Emily Dickinson. This is what Emily Dickinson wrote. Quote, "Pain has an element of blank. It cannot recollect when it began or if there were a day when it was not. It has no future but itself. Its infinite realms contain its past, enlightened to perceive new periods of pain." That's Emily Dickinson. And when you think about the pain that unfortunately has no future but itself, as Emily Dickinson says there, and maybe engenders fear might be the wrong word, but some anxiety in migraine sufferers. Is it going to come at the worst time? Is it going to shut me down on a day where I can't be shut down? It can be very difficult, Kathy, for people who don't suffer migraine, even loved ones of people who do, to really fully get it, because this is not you're not on crutches. You don't have a cast on. There isn't a physical indication that you can measure. And I think that invisibility makes it more difficult for people to get it. What do you think?
I absolutely think so. In fact, if you don't mind, I was just going to share one passage from this is a piece. It's called An Uncommon Pain, Living with the Mystery of Headache by Sally Tisdale. And this short passage, I think, captures so much of what people don't see. It says, migraine is a peculiar insult, an intrusion into the mind. It's inherently emotional. The pain makes it hard to think and destroys equanimity, but so does the accompanying neuronal storm. Headaches trigger a response in the emotional centers of the brain. Your head is making you lose your temper, making you cry. I'm not trying to claim that the pain of a headache is necessarily worse than the pain of broken bones or gnaws of tumors and infection, though certain types of headache cause profound pain. But there's something fundamentally different about it. It's a pain benign in a technical sense, malignant in an existential one. The sufferer is oddly contracted and reduced. The word is almost unbearably banal for the metaphysical jolt and psychic crisis engendered. What we call headache is a neurological event encompassing every part of the person, body, mind, feeling, and the ephemeral construct we call self. And I think that captures it beautifully. And none of that those are things that people see.
Talking to Kathy O'Shea, professor of English at MCC and author of So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. Kathy has taken the time not only to write about migraine and her experience herself, which we're going to ask her to read a little bit for us in our second half hour, but also to go throughout history to understand what writers, many poets and writers that we've been reading, scientists, some people's names you have not heard of, some you certainly have, what they have written about this. And it is helping, I think, the reader understand the challenge of living with migraine, the challenge of dealing with a disease, really, that is different to every person who suffers it, and the lifelong struggle of it. In fact, that's one of the sections of this book, essentially treating it like a lifelong job of dealing with migraines. So let's take our only break of the hour. And on the other side of this break, I am going to ask Kathy if she doesn't mind, if she wants to read some of her own work. I could read it for her if she wants, but I've got some of it here because there's an essay from Kathy that's in this book. Gail Mazur, there's others, Hilary Mantel. We're going to go ahead and keep reading and sharing these stories throughout history of great writers, great scientists, great thinkers who lived and dealt and deal with migraine. I'm one of them. I just happen to be in the middle of migraine right now. Started this morning. I'm doing fine, hanging in there. Some of mine are worse than others, but they affect more people than you probably realize. And I think it's wonderful if we can try to understand. If we can't have empathy, maybe sympathy and understanding for those who work through this and try to live with it. The book from Kathy is called So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature, and we continue on the other side of this break. I'm Evan Dawson, Monday on The Next Connections. How can we make mental health services accessible to everyone? It's a question that leaders at the Interdenominational Health Ministry Coalition have been considering. They've launched a pilot program called Community Counseling Circle, and it's aimed at providing counseling to underserved populations. We talk about how it works and who might benefit Monday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Kathy O'Shea, there's an essay called I Know Upon Awakening.
Yeah, I kind of know that one.
if you don't mind, can I ask you to read some of that?
Absolutely. I'd be honored.
Okay.
I've got to find it myself.
As Kathy finds it, by the way, I mean, the book really is mostly her collection and editing of the writings of others about migraine, but she included one of her own essays, I Know Upon Awakening. What section of the book is this one? I don't remember offhand, Kathy.
I believe it's in the second section. I'm embarrassed to say I'm still hunting down my own essay. Oh, dear.
It's okay. And listeners, if you're just joining us, we'll share some of your own experiences as we go throughout this hour, too, because some are writing to share what they've been experiencing. And I think just connecting to the idea that some of their loved ones just struggle to get it sometimes. Mel writes to us. Mel says on Twitter, when I tried to describe it to Mike, talking about her spouse, he says he couldn't really grasp what I was trying to get across. It's pretty trippy. It is pretty trippy, Mel. That is
trippy.
That is a good way of describing it. And Mel says, was grateful for the last time Connections addressed migraines. I just started getting auras, and like any normal person, I just assumed I was dying. Instead, the doctor explained it well for me and set me at ease. Yeah, Mel. Mel, I don't know if you're listening right now, and really for everybody, if you want to see what auras look like, there is migraine art. If you Google migraine art and just doing a Google image search, you'll find it pretty quickly. It's the crescent moon, sparkly, zigzaggy, crazy stuff. And that's it for me. It starts real small, and then it grows into that, and then it blows straight out of my field of vision over the course of about half an hour or so. And the weird thing is, if I am asleep, whatever I am dreaming, there will be basically lava. It's like a volcano eruption, and there have been weird dreams where I've been in the middle of a dream going, oh, wait, I'm having a migraine, and I wake up. I mean, just very strange stuff. But that's what your brain does when you have migraine. Kathy, if you want to read from I Know Upon Awakening, your essay in the book, go ahead.
Sure. Thank you. I lift my head gingerly off the pillow this morning and every morning to know what kind of day I will live. When I awake with a full-blown attack, it's often too late to rescue the force of the event I will face. If I lift my head and find it heavy to hold up, with all that all too familiar deep pain in the right side of my neck along the occipital nerve, my fate for the earlier future is still up in the air. Sometimes I can stop it. That is, if I can function well enough to break the glass vial, open the packages of syringe and filter needle, fill the syringe with the DHE, change back the end of the syringe from the filter to the needle, and give myself an injection in my thigh. If I think clearly enough to remember the anti-nausea medicine, I may be spared an additional agony. If the pain moves to a throbbing pounding behind my right eye, I haven't caught it in time. And the nausea and vomiting are much more agonizing, trying to survive, having my head and arms lying on the toilet seat as I try to vomit away the nausea. Migraine has now taken ownership of my body and my psyche. But another distinct possibility is I'll carry this with me throughout the day, and likely several more, is an extreme tightness along the right side of my neck, with pain so great in this one tiny deep spot in the muscle along the occipital nerve. I long for someone to, or something to bear down there with as much pressure as possible. The trigger points at the base of my skull feel like swollen knots, very tender to the touch. You know, this will be a day, with luck, just a functional day, one where I can carry on with only the skeletal of living. And then the last thing I just wanted to say, because it brings up something you mentioned earlier, is the fear of what if it never breaks this time, this fear and living with the constant threat that one wrong turn of my neck will throw me into the wrenching pain of a full-blown headache, leaves me very anxious. The awful truth is that many of my symptoms, when in a functional stage, I can hide from all but close friends and family. But the hiding is such a struggle and further supports the opinion of so many that it's just a headache. Much of my migraine is invisible to most and very lonely for the migrainer.
Yeah, I'm just so grateful for this, Kathy, because your experience is very different than mine. And my experience is very different than some of the listeners sharing their own experiences with migraine. And I think it just it helps us develop some empathy to really just continue to hear each other's stories. But not because, you know, it's interesting as I read your essay and I read this book and think about what everybody has gone through with migraine. I am not somebody myself who I don't want people to sort of pity me. I mean, I had a conversation with my son recently and, you know, we talked about the fact that everybody's got something, you know, nobody gets to go through life without something. I mean, even if it's less severe, like, you know, so whether it's a child with eczema, whether it's an adult with eczema, whether it's an adult with depression, whether it's migraines, whether it's Raynaud's syndrome. I mean, there's so many. Like, there's just you can go down the list and all the stuff. Most people, I don't really know anybody who doesn't have something that, you know, chronically pops up, even if it's severe allergies. And we just talked about this. And I said, you know, I don't want people to pity me for my migraine, but I just want them to understand. I want them to understand. And most of the time, it doesn't debilitate me. It doesn't shut me down. But if it does, I just hope they can understand. That's kind of where my mentality is. Like, I don't want pity at all.
Sure.
Just, we're hoping to get a little understanding. How do you feel about it?
No, I think you're absolutely right. I think that is what, what most migraine sufferers want is people to, I'm hoping with this book that people will learn to empathize more. I mean, that is one of the goals. One of the goals is to educate people about the, you know, some of the truths about the disease. But also to just understand and perhaps, you know, create a bit more empathy for those who are suffering, because it's also important that I think coworkers and employers have a better understanding too. I mean, I've done a lot of reading about, you know, obviously the impact it has on people at work, and the cost of migraine, you know, economically, and because, you know, people miss so much work from it. But I do think that if coworkers and employers and loved ones and friends and those who haven't experienced it directly could just have a better understanding, I think that is exactly what I would hope for.
I think that's beautiful and important and well said here. And Kathy is our guest, a professor of English at MCC and the author of So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. Ben writes to say, Evan, you began the hour describing a visual phenomenon all too familiar to me, which I believe is often referred to as an ocular migraine. I've experienced these for many years, and while they do somewhat impact my quality of life, I have never experienced the migraine headaches that you do and are the topic of this discussion, so I count myself lucky. Do all migraine sufferers experience the visual symptoms you described? How many people experience headaches without the visual phenomenon or visual phenomenon without the headaches? Ben, it's a mix. My understanding, and Kathy has probably read more on the literature than I have on this, so as we mentioned, only about 1 in 5, maybe a little bit less, maybe 1 in 5 to 1 in 6 people who suffer migraine have the visual aura that goes with it, or just the aura. So migraine aura is not in the majority. It's in a minority, and it's 17 to 20%. Kathy, is that your understanding?
Yeah, I think right. I think that sounds about right.
Okay, and then so most people who suffer migraine in different ways. Usually pain, sometimes pain that lasts for many hours, can be even days. Light sensitivity, you can get extreme nausea. I think that I'm doing my best here, Kathy. You want to jump in to help answer
Sure.
some of Ben's questions?
I can't answer how many, how many people suffer the aura without the migraine. I'm not really sure about that, but Evan is correct in terms of the percentage of people who do experience aura before migraine. But I would like to add that people with migraine do have warning signs other than, aura. I mean, there are phases of migraine, and the first is called the prodrome phase. And that phase is when one gets the warning signs that an attack is on its way. And that's when you first want to take your acute medications, when you first start getting those warning signs. So, for instance, for me, there's some very unusual warning signs, too. And that's why it's so worth reading so many, different works, because some of these are going to really resonate with you more than others. And what I found is that through my work and my research, that there are some really common warning signs, and there's some very uncommon ones. And it wasn't until I started doing this reading that I realized, wait a minute, this that happens with you is a warning. There's a pattern here. Every time you start this, you end up with a migraine. And you know what that is? It's something very unusual, and it's very common for migrainers. Excessive yawning. I mean, it can be as many as like 12 to 18 hours even before I get a migraine. But I will be yawning so excessively mm-hmm. and so frequently that I can't be in public because it's embarrassing.
Wow.
And I suffer TMJ as well, and so it gets so painful. But that means it's an unusual warning sign, right? That you're going to be getting a headache attack, migraine attack. But it's just one of many that people have. The cognitive problems that we mentioned earlier, fuzziness, extreme mood swings. I think as one learns to recognize what their warning signs are, it allows them the ability to take some of these newer medications at an earlier point, which have proven to be much more successful that way. So it's important to understand what those triggers are, or those warning signs.
Yeah. And then the question is how you deal with this. So how do people with migraine self-medicate? Patrick writes to say, I can only imagine that people with migraines, especially before they become diagnosed, try a myriad of self-medicating mm-hmm. behaviors and attempt to make it go away or feel comfort. I was wondering if you could share some of their favorite ways to medicate in an effort to experience relief. And I would imagine if CBD, THC help with inflammation, perhaps a topical salve applied could help. So Patrick, that's a really good question. And he was asking, he goes on to ask, is it true that there's really nothing, no drug on the shelf that can help? That is not true, Patrick. I mean, it's different for everybody, and it changes over time. So when I was 17, I was first diagnosed with migraine, and I had been in the hospital for another surgery, and I was experiencing migraine, didn't know what it was. And they almost did a spinal tap on me. They thought my brain might be hemorrhaging until a neurologist said, hey, this guy's having a migraine. And thank goodness, but they prescribed Imitrex. They said, you can take a needle if you want to give yourself a shot. And I said, no way. I am not capable of that. Sorry, Kathy, you can do that. I cannot do it. Mm-hmm. So I took the pill form of Imitrex. And I always told people for years, maybe about a decade, that if I didn't have Imitrex, the migraine was going to be intense for 6 to 9 hours. And if I took Imitrex, it'd be 3. I couldn't get it to go away, but it would lessen it and it would blunt it a little bit. And at the time, I had excessive yawning too, and I would vomit. And vomiting actually sort of helped me. Then it kind of changed because I would only get 2 or 4 a year, and now I get about 30 to 50 a year, and they're not as intense usually with the pain except for 1 or 2 times a year. And I just take a leave. I've tried Maxalt. I've tried other drugs that were prescribed. They make me pretty nauseous. I don't like that. I get dizzy. So I just kind of hang through it as best I can. I've tried a lot of weird things in a pinch, Patrick. I had a presentation I had to give at Colgate one day, and I had a migraine, and I went to a friend who does acupuncture because there are no atheists in a foxhole, and I felt pretty good that day. I tried acupuncture a month later with a migraine, and it did nothing for me. So it changes. It changes, and that it can become very difficult for people because what may work for a while may stop, or you know, sort of it vice versa. It's a weird thing, and there's not one single answer. But one thing that does come up a lot, Kathy, is Botox. It's one of the newer forms of treatment, maybe not for everybody, but how about you?
Wow, it's an integral part of my regimen for migraine. It's predictable that Botox lasts 9 to 10 weeks when it's working, and I can always tell. And I'm not alone. This is almost universally true for people, other patients that I've talked to, and actually headache specialists and neurologists I've talked to, that interestingly enough, insurance tends to cover it for every 12 weeks, and yet it really only lasts 9 to 10 weeks. And so you've got this, intermittent period where you're not being covered. So that's a difficult thing, but I can tell, I know it works for me because I know when it stops. And so it's an integral part of my treatment. I have a treatment plan, and I think it's important that those who suffer migraine and it's a serious enough problem that it impacts your quality of life, that you do seek help to get the right medications for you. It is a lot of trial and error. It mm-hmm. can be very frustrating, but there are new medications that are as I said earlier. Only in the last 5 years, I think this is really important to recognize, have migraine treatments of various kinds, including oral medications, what are called CGRP medications, have been researched and are now on the market for specifically to treat migraine. Because we now scientists so much better understand what migraine is and does. So there are treatments. They don't always work. In fact, sometimes, as you say, they'll blunt the pain, but they won't completely take it away.
Yep.
But there are a combination of things that people can do. And, acupuncture, it does work for some people. I know it to be true. It doesn't work for me, but it definitely works for some people. Biofeedback is another treatment a lot of people use. I go to a physical therapist, highly recommend her, Jenny Tuller, who works with migraine patients, particularly people with the cervical aspect of migraine. And I also go to a chiropractor who, Dr. Leslie Lane, who has been in my corner and a supporter of mine and helper to me for many years. And then I was a patient of Dr. Joseph Mann. Many of your listeners know him if they suffer with migraine. And though now retired, he still works for Rochester Clinical Research in migraine studies. So he's still very involved in the up and coming. So I mean, we have people in this area that, and I have a neurologist that Dr. Gajavira, who is wonderful. and does the Botox treatments for me. You know, there's things like nerve blocks, there are IV intravenous drugs available, that treatments and protocols, they call them, that are out there. So people, you need, if, I know it's frustrating, but if one thing doesn't work, don't give up. That's the important thing, is that you keep trying.
Yeah, Kathy and I are not medical doctors, but the message is,
no,
but the message no. that doctors would endorse is, if the first thing you try doesn't work, don't give up.
Yeah, that's all I'd say message. About that. You're right. I don't claim to have
Absolutely.
Any knowledge.
No. But that's the message. It's important because you have to kind of move around and try.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about Dear Migraine by Gail Mazur. You know, this is a poem that is in a section of the book. I think the fourth section is sort of kind of like treating migraines like a lifelong job that you've got to live with.
Yes.
And so let me read from Gail, and we'll talk about this. The poem called Dear Migraine. Quote, "You're the shadow lurking in me, and the lunatic light waiting in that shadow. Ghostwriter of my half-life, intentions ambush I can't prepare for, ruthless whammy. You have me ogling a blinding sun, my right eye naked even when both lids closed. Glowering sun, unerring navigator around this darkened room. You're my laser probe. I'm your unwilling wavelength. I can never transcend your modus operandi. I've given up trying to outsmart you. And the new thinking says I didn't invent you. Whatever you were to me, I've outgrown. I don't need you, but your tenacity embodied. Tightening my skull, my temple like plastic wrap. Many times I've traveled to a dry climate that wouldn't pander to you, as if the great map of America's deserts held the key to a pain-free future. But you were an encroaching line in the sand. Then you were the sand. We've spent the best years of my life intertwined. Wherever I land, you entrap me in the unraveled faces of panhandlers, their features, my features, you. Little death I won't stop for. Little death luring me across the footbridge to the other side, oblivion's anodyne. Soon, I can't know where or when, we'll dance, ache to ache, again on my life's fragments, one part abandon, the other abundance." Remarkable stuff here. What does this poem say to you, Kathy?
You know, I think it speaks a lot to the fact that it is a lifelong full-time job. I mean, which is in the sense that there is no cure. And even though, you know, a lot of treatment helps, it's part of you. You know, the term migrainer is a controversial one. And yet I do continue to use it. I know the controversy about it, because basically the controversy is that if you are referred to as a migrainer, then that defines you. You know, that's how you're defined. And I don't really see it that way. I see it as, first of all, an easier term to use instead of keep saying I suffer with migraine. But more importantly, migraine is a part of me. It's not even just a companion. It's part of who I am. It's part of myself. And so I don't want to deny that. I think it's better to accept it and to learn to find ways to live with it. But what I think she says here, which I find, I love the part you read where she says, you know, I've given up trying to outsmart you. Mm-hmm. And the new thinking says I didn't invent you. So in other words, I don't need to take down that guilt, that, you know, responsibility, but everything I've done to try to outgrow you and to move past you doesn't work. And there are things people do. They move to warmer, drier climates. So because people are, you know, many of us who suffer with migraine are very affected by the rapid changes in barometric pressure, and which we get a lot of in Rochester. And so, And so sometimes they say going to a warmer climate will help. So she's tried, you know, and then when she says we've spent the best years of my life intertwined, I think, and then you entrap me. And I think that's exactly the way it feels. And that's why I feel like, you know, when a migraine leaves you, it's like it lifts from you. It's because it's like lifting from your whole body, your whole experience, not just your headache, but that whole entity that is migraine lifts from you. And it's a completely new world.
Yeah, this poem, you're right. People have literally moved to new time zones just to try to find a way to live better, to live more free of it. And every person who has suffered migraine, I can say this pretty confidently, has had a moment where they think, maybe that was the last one. Maybe somehow that was it. And it almost never is, but that hope is always there for us. And the hope of a treatment that is more universal. But I just want to thank Kathy O'Shea for being with us. Professor of English at MCC and author of So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. The book is available. It can help you, someone you love, someone you know, or maybe your doctor understand this. And 30 seconds, Kathy, anything you want to leave listeners with? Go ahead.
I guess, the hope. I think I do want to leave people with hope, because I know that I've talked a lot about the pain and the difficulty and the complexity of it. But there's this one last passage, and it's just the last stanza from a book and or from a poem. And I think it captures beautifully what I would like to leave people with.
All right, you got to do it fast. We got the music playing.
Okay,
go ahead.
If you ride long enough, you come to sunrise, to a gentle, natural light that could hurt nobody, sunshine and birdsong.
That is a very hopeful way to close it. And that is how it feels when the migraine lifts, that's for sure.
Yes.
Here's hoping that many more of your days are migraine-free, Kathy O'Shea.
And thank you as well.
Well, you know, we're all in this together here. And good luck with this book. Thanks for putting it together.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk with you and your audience.
Kathy O'Shea, who is the author and editor of So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. Rob Braden, the engineer. Emma Ray Stein, Megan Mack, producer. Evan Dawson saying, thanks for listening. We're back with you Monday on member-supported Public Radio.